Good morning. Really appreciate you guys coming down this morning. I know the 8:30 session after the party is pretty special. So I guess all the people here really want to know a lot more about Azure AD B2C. So Chris and I, I really appreciate that. So I guess the takeaways from this session are going to be basically six main points. I know there's only four up there, but the six questions that typically I think we all would ask when we start working with B2C, and that's: how do I provision an application? How does the application model work for Azure AD B2C versus a traditional Azure AD app? What's the developer experience like? So what developer libraries am I working with? It'll be, what are our extensibility options? So B2C provides a whole lot of extensibility in regards to the look and feel, how the authentication flows work, how the claims are constructed, the tokens are constructed, and what claims go in those tokens. Then we want to talk a little bit about limitations. So there's some current limitations which are quite well advertised on the B2C website. And we've kind of sprinkled them throughout the talk to just kind of give you some context about where they really relate to. We're also going to look at there'll be some tips and tricks along the way, and how to best how to create a kind of gentle on-ramp into using B2C. And finally, we're going to look at a migration story. So there is some guidance on the web in regards to using the Graph API to migrate your users and what you have to do to take an application from using a traditional, being backed by Azure AD, and now I want to use B2C as my identity store. So there is some guidance up there, but it doesn't really talk about a real world experience. Like, what do we want our users' experience to be when migrating across from one system to another? So that's probably the final thing we'll take a look at. So the building blocks of a B2C application, basically, all the provisioning of the application is done on the new portal. So we use the B2C blade rather than the Azure Active Directory blade. So the B2C blade, and Chris went through all that yesterday in his session. So show you how to provision an application there. For developer libraries, well, there's some nuances there, and basically your web applications and single page applications, well, we want to use an OpenID Connect client. You can use any open source OpenID Connect client, but we have to be able to customize it a little bit and hook the authentication, because we need to put an extra policy in that B2C kind of adds on top of a standard OAuth. But for native applications, if we're looking at Windows Store, desktop, Windows 8.1, that's all exclusively MCEL, and the Microsoft Authentication Library handles that really well. For iOS and Android, we once again want to use any OpenID Connect client. And finally, using OWIN guidance on the bottom, that's talking more about on the server side. So if we want to be able to inspect those custom JWTs that are coming up, and look at the claims inside and utilize that information, well, we're just going to use OWIN middleware and use, say, system identity models.tokens.jwt to inspect those tokens and use that information. So, application types. Oh, this is the limitations. So currently the limitations are there's no client credential grant. So you can't do daemon style or server side applications that will come in and perform an action just using a certificate or a secret. So you can do it if you're quite happy to work against the graph. So you can kind of get around that, but natively it's not supported. Now, B2C doesn't issue an access token. It issues an ID token, which can be used with any application with the same application ID. But you can't you're not issued with an access token, so you can't go in and use that to go and hit backend web APIs. So that's currently a limitation. And same with web API chains, using the on behalf of grant to pass on a user context onto further APIs. Redirection endpoints. The limitation here is that the reply to URLs have to be in the same domain. So you can't have Contoso redirecting to Fabricam. That won't work. But subdomains are fine. So you can redirect from, you know, you can go east and redirect to west.contoso.com. Libraries and SDKs. Well, it's not really a limitation, but more. More just some rules for living, and I guess I just went through those in regards to what libraries and SDKs apply to what application type. And so just once again, MSL for native applications, OpenID Connect libraries for web APIs, and iOS and Android. And finally protocols. So OAuth protocols that are supported, it'll be OAuth and OpenID. But SAML and WSFed are currently not supported.
Cool. Actually, there is one other thing to be aware of with regards to authentication libraries. If you are choosing an OpenID Connect library to use with a native platform, such as Android or iOS, and that is that you want to ensure that you choose one that does not include an embedded web view in order to sign an end user into your native application. That's been the user agent model that's used in the past, where your native application hosts a web view and users interacting with that web view to sign themselves into your native application. In April, I believe it is mid-April, Google will no longer allow Google Plus users to log in via an embedded web view into a native application. So if you are kind of researching or experimenting with different OpenID Connect client libraries, ensure you choose one that will swap out to the OS browser. So there is kind of, from a user experience point of view, they open your native application, click the login button, swaps out to the system browser where they sign themselves in, and as a result, that system browser will post tokens back to your native application to represent that authenticated user. So just be aware of that as well. So Simon's kind of talked about one of the three pillars that I introduced yesterday being authentication. The second pillar I discussed yesterday was extensibility. So for those that did attend last evening's session, most of this should be familiar to you. I really just want to touch on a few things here with regards to extensibility capabilities of the B2C platform. Primarily firstly the reporting API, which I'll demonstrate a little bit later. So I alluded to this yesterday. So like an Azure AD Enterprise directory, which features a reporting API endpoint from which you can download, you know, usage statistics and metrics and counts of how your enterprise directory is being used, that same endpoint is available to your B2C at your B2C tenant. New reports are being added. Most recently, there's been about 6 or 8 reports have been added that are related to the kind of usage of your B2C directory, you know, sign-ins by users, different applications using different policies, for example. So I'll demonstrate that a little bit later. Also yesterday, I demonstrated the creation and issuance of tokens and the claims that are contained within those tokens. If you did attend yesterday's session, you might remember when I was setting a new policy up, there was, as part of that new policy blade, I could choose token claims and select all the claims that I wanted issued as part of those identity tokens that are issued by B2C. One thing just to be aware of there is that if you add too many claims to an identity token that's issued by B2C, you might have issues with certain browsers, Safari for one, where the token string is too long and the browser will limit the use of that or posting of that back to your application. That's well advertised on the B2C website as well in the online docs. We covered UI customizations yesterday. I'll dive a little bit deeper into that today, and in particular the limitations of customizing the sign-in policy login screen. What else? Email verification as well, which I'll touch on a little bit later, is now an option or a capability you can opt out of if you wish to do so. Again, I'll demonstrate that. for those who didn't attend yesterday's session, just quickly on local accounts and social accounts, when you create a B2C tenant, you can allow users to create local accounts, those are managed by the directory that backs that B2C tenant, or you can allow users to bring their identity from elsewhere, specifically Amazon, Facebook, Google, LinkedIn and Microsoft. And we'll show that through a demonstration later, just perhaps as a reminder more than anything else. We'll also touch on a little bit later account attributes and how those are managed and how through the Graph API you can get and set those custom attributes about users as well. In terms of limitations with regards to extensibility, as I mentioned, branding the local account sign-in page when you're using a sign-in policy, not the unified policy that I demonstrated yesterday, there are some limitations around that insofar as you can only use the company branding feature of an Azure AD directory to brand that sign-in page. I'll show you that in a moment. Similarly, the email notifications that are sent when out to a first-time user when they sign themselves up has Microsoft branding on it by default. Again, you can customise that using the company branding feature, but that customization is limited in terms of its scope and what you can do with those email notifications. Okay, so let me just demonstrate that quickly while I'm talking about it. So this is the same B2C the B2C directory that I was demonstrating yesterday. What I want to do is I'll open up an application that will demonstrate how I can customize the sign-in policy, login experience. So this is the same application that I demonstrated yesterday that I've deployed to an Azure app service. I just allow it to warm itself up. Here it is. So when I click login, and rather than using the unified policy which I was using yesterday, I'm going to use the basic sign-in policy. Now overnight I've configured this to again allow users to either log in using a local account or a Google account, but as you can see it's kind of a default branding at the moment. So what I want to do is customise this. In fact, what I want to demonstrate is if I click local account, the customisation of this page. Okay. So all I can do to customise this is in my Azure AD directory that backs my B2C tenant, I open the Azure AD blade. I choose company branding. So you might be doing this with your enterprise directory, maybe to have a background or a hero image that represents your company's brand. So I've selected company branding. I want to edit it in order to select a file that I want to show in that area to the left there, and maybe a logo in the top right. So I'm going to choose my background, my hero image that represents my product, my site brand, and Wingtip Toys is my company brand. I'll save that. Let's give it a few moments to hopefully, I'll just refresh this page a couple of times. One more time for that. And there's Wingtip Toys as well, okay? That is the limit of what you can customize for this sign-in policy, right? That differs to what I demonstrated yesterday. By the way, you'll also notice there's no username or email address and password labels on those text boxes, which you can't override or set. How that differs to what I demonstrated yesterday when I choose the unified policy. Right, this is where I brought my own HTML and had full control over the look and the feel and the basic behaviour of this page. Yep. I'll dive a bit deeper into this later on what that HTML, how that was constructed and deployed. Cool.
All right, so we're going to take a look at provisioning an application. Like Chris yesterday was taking you through provisioning a B2C application and using the B2C blade in the portal in order to provision an application. in order to, as a kind of foundation for our migration story, we're going to be doing some stuff with the graph. So we're going to use the graph to import users. So in order to do that, we're going to be using a traditional Azure AD application. So I'm about to show. I've just pre-recorded the actual demo, and using Postman to go and hit the endpoints to show you what's happening under the cover. But basically, we're going to go and create an application. We're going to add the secret. We're going to grant the permissions to the service principals. We'll grant access to the active to read and write to our Active Directory, and then we're going to just show Postman going and grabbing an access token, just using the underlying API, and then going and both reading users and going and creating a user. So let's just kick that off. So basically, we're going into the Azure Active Directory blade, and we're just opening up app registrations for the tenant. Now, we're just going and adding a new application, giving it a name, and for this the sign-on URL just doesn't matter. So we'll put localhost. Then we're going to want to open up that application so we can set the permissions and grab some details that we're going to need for our application. So, as I said, the required permission will be we want to go and access the directory. We need to be able to read and write to the directory. And then we want to go and press the magic grant permissions button, which will actually assign the permissions to the service principals.
That's new. That's been released in the last week or so, which is a godsend for demos like this.
Yeah. Otherwise, we would have had to do it in PowerShell. But so we're going to go and create a secret because we're going to be using a credential flow, client credential flow. So we just need to go and grab a secret. So we go and generate one till the end of time. Just grab that and throw it in Notepad. We'll need it later. And then the other piece of information we're going to need is the actual application ID. So we just go back and grab that as well. And that's pretty much all we need in order to make requests against the graph now using Azure AD. And I'll go and open up Postman now. Alrighty. So basically, I've got a request there, and I've got the body will contain some stuff I'll be posting to that to the graph. So we'll be taking the client secret and the application ID, or the client ID. I've got a new surface, and the home and end share the function keys, so I have to keep switching between it. I'm just used to being able to get shift home, and I keep pressing it, and like it goes volume up. So we'll go and send that request, and we'll get back a JSON web token. Now, that's basically a bearer token that we can go and use to make subsequent requests against the graph. So we just go and throw that in an authorization header. Now this is basically I'm just calling get all users. And that's showing you it's returning the information from the graph. So we can use that in our own application. And then the next one I'm going to show is how I can create a user. So I'm going to jump in here and show you that so the user doesn't exist. Nothing up my sleeve. Put that. And you show the body. The body contains the payload, which is documented on the B2C. Oh, it's within the documentation of B2C, and we'll show you how to construct that JSON for creating users. So,
yeah, perhaps the one just to call out here, like I introduced yesterday, when you enable local accounts in your B2C tenant, you can choose between users registering themselves or signing themselves up with either an email address or a username, which would be a username like a user ID, cPaget, for example. So in this particular case, what Simon's doing is creating a user with an email address. It might be a little hard to see at the back, but that signing names array has a type of email address with the user's email address, right? So that really determines how they're going to sign themselves into your B2C applications as a result.
You've got control over whether you want to force them to change the password the next time, whether you want to set password expiration to be never. You have all that kind of finely grained control. And F5, there it is, magic. So this application I'm showing the users on is basically, there's a sample on the Azure AD, on the Azure AD Quick Start, which allows you to go and access the graph in the same way I have and show items such as users and groups and anything within Azure AD. Limitations. So there's some limitations that currently some of them are on the roadmap and some of them are more long-term. The one that's not on the roadmap is nesting of groups. So it's quite well advertised that there's no plans to be able to do this. Use of the differential query from the Graph API. So this is allowing you to ask for changes between two points in time. It's on the long-term roadmap, but not currently available.
So Simon's already shown you that demonstration. I guess just to recap quickly, yesterday I introduced those three pillars of the B2C platform in terms of services, authentication, extensibility, and integration. Really was recaps and summarised what was discussed yesterday, and also introduced a few limitations to be aware of, perhaps when you're adopting some of those capabilities for the first time. So Simon showed you that demonstration of being able to manage users in your B2C tenant using the Graph API. With that, I might move on to the next section, which I'll kind of walk you through a few things you might not know about your B2C tenant, but are nonetheless hopefully good things to know about it. The first one is billing and the difference between production scale and preview tenants. So as I mentioned yesterday, the B2C services was in preview for quite a while, became generally available in the second half of the last year for North American countries. I described that in detail yesterday, but I'll quickly recap on that. So you can only deploy a production application to a B2C tenant if it's located in North America. Okay. If you want to deploy applications to a B2C tenant that you've created in Europe or Asia, then Microsoft won't support it because it's not considered a GA location for B2C. Does that make sense? North America, you're good. Anywhere else, not so good. Okay. You can't currently create a B2C tenant in Australia. So if data sovereignty is important to you, actually take a step back. If you create a B2C tenant in North America, information about the data about the identity accounts and so on and so forth will remain within that region. Okay, it won't be geo-replicated elsewhere around the world. Okay, so the B2C team will ensure that your directories in North America are kind of a geo-fenced to that region. Similarly, when it becomes generally available in Europe and elsewhere, then that geofencing will apply there as well. Now, I'm not sure whether Australia's it's very far away from the rest of the world, I guess, but we're kind of down the list in terms of having a generally available service in our particular region. But when it does become available, the hope is that we'll be able to have data sovereignty of those accounts. In terms of billing, I demonstrated this yesterday. When you create a B2C tenant, you have to link it to an Azure subscription so that Microsoft can bill you for the use of it. That's a bit of a convoluted process. You have to create your directory in the classic portal, and then in the new portal, then add B2C from the marketplace. so that it links your B2C tenant to an Azure subscription. Okay. If you missed yesterday's session, I'd suggest you go and watch it later, and I'll walk through those steps and how to do that. If you created a preview tenant early last year or late the year before, you cannot promote it to a production scale tenant. Okay. So a preview tenant had limits in terms of size and so on and so forth. A production scale tenant is a, I think what they call a massive scale Azure AD directory that can manage hundreds of millions of identities. Okay. Preview tenants did not have that scale. So if you've been using a preview tenant for a little while, you can't promote it or swap it with a production scale tenant. You'll have to create yourself a production scale tenant and determine how you're going to migrate identities into it if you're using that preview tenant for non-production applications today. Maybe our migration walkthrough might give you a few hints on how to do that. Okay. So yeah, just be aware of some of that. Email verification. So what I want to talk about here is that when users sign up by default with your B2C tenant, by default they have to verify their email address. Okay. And that's irregardless of whether you want your local accounts to be using an email address, a unique identifier for a local account, or a username. Okay. So if users sign themselves up using an email address for their local account identifier, like I demonstrated yesterday, B2C will send them a verification code that they have to receive at that email address so they can enter it in the sign-up flow and have it validated and verified. Okay. If they're signing themselves up using a username such as cpadgett rather than cpadgett@cloud.com.au, there's still an email address field that they have to enter to receive the verification code to have it verified before they can complete the sign-up flow. Okay, that's by default. Again, a few weeks ago, that default has been loosened a little bit, so you can choose to disable email verification for your sign-up flows. Okay, and if I can remember where that is, I'll show you how to do it, because there's an important warning on the opt-out page. So I'll just return to B2C tenant. And I'll choose a sign up or sign in policy, the unified policy that I created yesterday. I'll edit it and I'll choose, I think it's here, UI customizations, local account sign up page. If I choose email address, I can opt out of having that email address verified with consent to that warning. Not recommended. If you turn it off, your app is responsible for verifying email addresses and deleting unverified user accounts. So you may choose to turn this off because you don't kind of want to intervene or have users have an email notification intervene in their sign-up flow. You just want to sign them up to your product or your site as quickly as possible. But it's then your responsibility to not necessarily have to verify the email address they've signed up with, but maybe after a 30-day trial of your product or your site, if they haven't verified their email address, which is something you can control, you may delete their unverified account from your B2C directory. Okay, so there is that option available to you now. This was an example of an item that was added to User Voice. I don't know if you visit User Voice often. The B2C engineering team very much prioritise their work around items or votes on the User Voice forum or site. Okay, this was one of those top voted ones, so they responded to it, which was good. That's that. So next, helper tool for UI customizations. So yesterday I've demonstrated kind of bringing my own HTML and CSS and images and fonts and so on to my B2C tenant to customize the user experience. To help with that, or what I did prior to yesterday's demonstration was upload all of those web assets to a storage account, a blob container in fact. Now, there are plenty of tools to interact with Azure blob storage accounts. So you can use those tools to manage those web assets in those blob containers. Or Microsoft also provide a command line tool, the helper tool, that will set that up for you. And I'll show you that in a few moments. Just on those UI customizations, you don't have to host them in a storage account. You may well host them with your web application on your web servers, okay? The only requirement is that you must add a cause policy that allows login.microsoftonline.com to make an AJAX request across to your domain, your blob, your storage account, or your web domain, to pull those files in real time down to the browser to render the user experience. Yep. Token session and SSO configuration. So in the last few months, the engineering team added a new menu item to one of the policy blade to allow you control what is issued in tokens, how long sessions will remain alive for the end user who are using your products and services, and the SSO experience that you want to provide to them. So this is good. It allows you to kind of switch between SSO for a single application or across applications or for a single policy or across policies and so on and so forth. I'll walk you through that in a moment. And I've already mentioned the reporting API, which I'll demonstrate now as well. Any questions on any of those before I get into the demos? No? So the first one is the helper tool. So let me go back to the dashboard. Actually, what I'll show you is this is another Azure subscription where I created the storage account, which is where I host, I'm going to store all the UI customizations. If I scroll down, if I scroll to containers, I created a container the other day called Wingtip Toys that contains all the HTML files for the different user experiences, whether it's selecting their Google account or signing themselves in, or resetting their password or multi-factor authentication, and so on and so forth. So these are just static files. I'll just show you what the files look like. Not much more than, zoom in. Not much more than that, okay? So this is an example of the unified page that offers both sign in as Google, sign in using a local account, or a link to forget your password or link to sign yourself up. All this is doing, it's just a HTML file containing links to Bootstrap and a custom CSS that I'm bringing with this custom HTML, okay? That custom CSS obviously applies styles to provide the feel and look of the login page, the sign-in and sign-up pages, okay? Otherwise, it's just using div elements with Bootstrap classes to lay the page out. And the important div that I noted yesterday is this one, the innermost one, which is this ID equals API. And this is the one that the B2C engine will inject their sign-up or sign-in fields into with classes that are well-documented so I can apply custom CSS to those, okay? So I can continue to control the look and the feel of it. So what I've done here is I've got four HTML files. I've got my CSS file. So, for example, I want the body background, the body background to refer to a custom image that I'm going to upload as well. It's responsive, so on and so forth. Okay, I can bring my own fonts, in particular these two here, and the images as well, the background image and the logo image. So to help me upload that, I've downloaded a command line tool, or it's a project, in fact, a Visual Studio solution from GitHub that I've built, and I'm going to run in a few moments to upload all those web assets to a storage account. Now, before I do that, I'll create a new storage account to prove that I'm not making all this up. Add a new container called Wingtip Corp. Ensure the access type is set to the blob. And that's all I have to do in the storage account. Now, the command line tool, I'm going to switch back over here and run this executable. The first thing it asks me is my blob. Is my storage account name, which I'm just going to copy from here. The primary access key, which I'm going to rotate later. The container name, which I created a few seconds ago. And a path to the files that I want to upload, which is here. And that path is what I've opened here. Okay. So I click Enter. It begins uploading all the HTML, CSS, fonts and image files. And at the very bottom there, you might notice that it also sets the cause policy on that blob, account, storage account, so the browser can reference those files when the page is rendering. Okay. There's a gotcha here, which I'll show you in a moment. So if I return to my blob container and click through on it, here are all the assets that are uploaded. Yep. Now what I want to do is modify my unified policy, my sign up, sign in policy to refer to these new files. And then hopefully we'll see the difference between them. So just to remind you, it used to look like this. This app service goes to sleep a bit too quickly. While it's warming up, I'm going to go into my sign up or sign in policy. Unified. Click edit. Page UI customization. And I'll just change the first page that's presented to the end user. Currently it's referencing my wingtip toys files. Just a quick reminder, click login, unified. Okay, that's my Wingtip Toys brand. I'm going to change it to my corporate brand. Okay, save. That's saved. I refresh this page. And there's my corporate brand, right? Different logo, different background. Okay. So what you can do across policies, you know, there's nothing stopping you from creating multiple sign up or sign in policies, maybe for your kind of customer brand, Wingtip Toys, your corporate brand, Wingtip Corp, or whatever else you may want to manage using your B2C tenant. Any questions about that? One of the notes I just did want to mention is if I just return to my blob server settings and choose cause, that command line tool added quite an open policy on allowing all origins, okay, to reference this blob account, this blob service. You might want to make that a little more specific to, MicrosoftOnline.com. And save it like that, okay? So to only pages are loaded from that domain that can reference these files and no other domains on the internet. Keeps it a little safer. So that's that. The next demo, token session and SSO configuration. So let me return to my unified policy. I'll edit it again and I'll open this recently added blade called token session and SSO configuration. And I'll take you step by step through each of these settings here. The first set of settings are related to the token lifetime. So don't be misled by access token lifetimes. As Simon mentioned earlier, B2C does not issue any access tokens as yet. Okay, but this does allow me to set the lifetime of an identity token, which by default is 60 minutes. Right. So as a result of an end user signing themselves in or signing themselves up, an identity token is issued to my web application, for example, which I should validate, and it will be active for up to 60 minutes. So I may choose to bring that down to a safer lifetime of, say, 5 minutes. Usually when you're issued with an identity token and you validate it, you can discard it most times, okay? So that lifetime should be kept as short as possible. The B2C service does issue refresh tokens. Was that person who asked about keep me signed in yesterday, are they here this morning? No? Perhaps I scared them off. I'll talk about refresh tokens in a few moments or demonstrate it. The question yesterday was, like Google and Facebook and other social sites, when you sign yourself in, usually by default they have a keep me signed in or stay signed in checkbox kind of checked to keep you active in their site as long as possible. You might notice the unified, or the sign in or sign up policy does not allow users to keep themselves signed in. However, Refresh Tokens will allow your native applications to keep those users signed into your native application for a length of time. Okay. So this Refresh Token by default has a lifetime of 14 days. So when the user authenticates themselves and your application is issued with an identity token, you can also be issued with an authorization code that you can exchange for a Refresh Token. If you've done any OpenID Connect or OAuth programming before, then you might be aware of those flows or those grant types. A Refresh Token is valid for up to 14 days, and then you can choose whether you can use that Refresh Token and the one that's issued as a result forever, which is when you choose no expiry, or by default you can only renew tokens using a Refresh Token for up to 90 days, after which time the user must re-authenticate themselves. Okay, so you can control the lifetime, not only the Refresh Token itself, but also how long Refresh Tokens can be used before users will have to re-authenticate themselves. Does that make sense? Yep. If I scroll down a little bit, we then move into the token compatibility settings. These really define what claims are issued in tokens and where the claim values will be derived from or will be set from. And the reason that I guess they call these the compatibility settings is that between preview and general availability, the use of these claims or the values for them are changed, right? So you may have built applications that against a preview tenant that expected the subject claim to be not supported, for example. If you then register that application, the same application with a general availability tenant, then it might have broken or vice versa or whatever. Okay, so really what this section allows you to do is choose who you wish the issuer claim to be set to, which is one of two options here, with an ugly GUID in the middle of it. The subject claim that will either be set to do not use as a string or not supported as a string, or the object identifier of the end user who signed themselves in, their user GUID, okay, as it's known to your B2C directory. So this is useful because you can read the subject claim value being set to the object ID of the end user to maybe look up their profile in your own product or site or service or wherever it may be. You know? Maybe look up a CRM entry for them or whatever else. Maybe link to that object ID. You also have the opportunity to set a claim whose value is set to the policy that was run to sign the user in or sign them up or whatever. Okay. So when I click the blue login button at the bottom of my login landing page to sign them in using the unified policy, the identity token that's issued to my web application as a result will have a TFP, Trust Framework Policy Claim, set to that policy name that was executed by my web application to sign the user in or sign them up. Okay. And where this is useful for me is there's nothing stopping a user when they click the blue login button and being redirected to B2C to change the policy that they're going to, because it's just kind of plain text in the address bar of the web browser. There's nothing stopping them from changing that from unified to sign in or whatever else, okay? Now, where this gets a little bit scary, what I guess we've got to be aware of, is that let's just assume that I have two unified policies, right? One that has MFA off and one that has MFA on, okay? Now, when the end user signs into my web application, I want to redirect them to the unified policy where MFA is on, so they'll be challenged to not only sign themselves in using a password, but using their phone as well. But maybe a user who's aware of what's going on, when they're redirected to that unified policy number two, changes the unified policy number one and effectively skips the MFA challenge. Okay? So this is useful, this claim, because what I can do is in that redirect, that unified policy, I can add some state that's round trip back to my web application after the user signed themselves in. And what I can stuff into that state bag is the policy I expect to be run and completed by the end user. Okay, and that state parameter is encrypted before it's sent to B2C, so the user cannot tamper with it. Okay, So there's this encrypted state that contains the policy that I expect to be run. As a result of a user signing themselves in, I can then decrypt that state bag, check what I expected to be run against what was actually run as specified by this TFP claim. And hopefully if those two policy names match, I know the user completed the user journey that I expected them to do so. Okay, so there's use to that claim there. Then if we scroll down a little bit further, session behaviour, so this defines the lifetime of the authentication session at the B2C service. So in this case, the user will be kept, will have an SSO session by default of 1440 minutes. And if the user is continuing to log into applications in that same tenant, that session lifetime will just roll forward by default. Okay, or I can set it to an absolute timeout of 1440 minutes. The last setting I'll just make you aware of is this single sign-on configuration. So by default, this is set to tenant. And what that means is that regardless of the application and the policy that users are using to access those applications, users will only have to sign into the first application using the first policy. When they open in the same browser session, if they open another application or the same application runs a different policy, users won't have to sign themselves in again. Okay. As an example of changing this, I can set this to application. Let's zoom back out. Okay it. Save it. I think that's done. I'll close this and open it again. It's done. And I've got two applications. So it's in fact the same code, but same application deployed twice to different app services, A and B, blue and green. So both of these applications are registered with the same B2C tenant. I'll wait for that one to warm up. So this is my blue app. I click login on the unified policy. I sign myself in. That's successful, signed in as Padge. If I go to the second app, my green app, click login, run the same policy. Because it has an SSO configuration that demands that they must sign into, you know, when they sign into different applications on the same policy, I'm prompted each time. Okay, so you have a few levers to pull there. If you want to override that setting as part of the redirect to the B2C tenant, you can add this extra parameter called prompt equals login, which the user can of course remove because it's just in the browser address bar. But regard that will override those SSO settings, so you can force them to re-authenticate by adding that prompt parameter. Cool. So that's token, session, and SSO configuration. Any questions about any of that? Yes. Yep. 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 Yeah, so the question was, if you sign your application without multi-factor, then you open application 2, which will sign you in using multi-factor authentication. They have to be different policies today. So they may be the same policy type, kind of that unified policy, but one policy will have it on and one policy will have it off. So in that case, if it's the same application, one of the other settings you could use, so maybe you want to step them up in your application and they're about to pay out of their bank account or something, then what you can do is set it, make sure that the SSO session is not shared across policies, right? So clicking policy means that if different applications use the same policy, there will be SSO. But if the same application or different applications use different policies, then that SSO session won't be shared. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So that tip about kind of adding the expected policy to be run to the set to the kind of the request state, so it's round tripped, and then verifying or matching against the one that was run is really important for those MFA scenarios. Because otherwise there's not a token claim that indicates they signed in using MFA. The only reference to MFA is a reference to the policy name, which you know has MFA turned on for it. Yeah. Cool. I could go on all day about this, but I won't. I'm going to go to the next demo, which is access to the reporting API. So what I've done in this, just go back to the dashboard, ignore all that. So I'm going to open up the Azure AD blade, for the directory that backs my B2C tenant. And to show that I've registered, Simon and I have registered a number of applications here. Okay, the one I'm going to use for reporting is this one here. So I created it the other day. It has an application ID. It has a secret. And in order to access the reporting API, I've granted it the read directory data permission. Okay. Just let me leave this open because I want to talk about a very important registered application, which is this one here in a moment. Okay, so I've created an Azure AD application. It's been issued with an application ID and secret, and I'm going to use the client credentials flow like Simon used earlier to acquire an access token from my B2C directory. So I'm going to send that. Here's the access token. Okay, and it's for use with a resource represented by this almost empty GUID, which is the Azure AD directory we're trying to pull reports from. Okay. If you're interested in what these tokens look like, these are just Azure AD tokens. They're just JWTs, okay, that you may be issued with today for your enterprise applications. Now what I want to do is go to the graph for my particular tenant, the graph API for my particular tenant, the reports endpoint. And in order to query it, in order to get a list of reports in this case, I'm going to send it with the bearer token that was issued to me a few moments ago. And as a result, you can see in here, this is just a list of reports are available for my B2C directory. There's some B2C related reports here. An authentication count summary, the number of MFA requests, authentication events, and so on and so forth. Okay. I'm going to demonstrate a couple of reports. The first one is the B2C authentication account summary. So this gives me a high-level summary of all authentications over the last 30 days, I think it is. So I'll just enter the same bearer token, click send. And this gives me a breakdown of authentications for the last 30 days. So there's some hybrid, implicit code and hybrid flows in here. On this particular date, on the previous day, there were 21 authentications using just an OpenID Connect flow and so on and so forth. Okay. This one is useful because authentications are billed. Right? Every time a user signs themselves up and comes under management, you know, B2C is taking management of their local account, you're billed for that at a very small percentage of a cent per month. Every time a user signs themselves in and an identity token is issued, you're billed for that as a very small percentage of 1 cent. Every time you refresh that identity token using a refresh token, you're billed for that at a very small percentage of 1%, 1 cent. Okay. So if you want to kind of keep on top on a daily basis, keep on top of the directory usage in terms of authentications. And user sign-ups, for example, there are different reports to help you with that billing, that daily billing report, okay? This is one of them. The other one I want to show you is B2C user journey events. This gives a kind of a deeper breakdown of the authentications that have occurred, which applications were executing them, and which policies were run, and whether they were successful or not. So this is showing on the 10th of the 2nd of this year. there was a policy that was run, which is the sign-in policy, by this application ID. Okay, and the user who has signed themselves in is identified by this object ID here. Okay, so that's all very cool. What I do want to show you is I've got a PowerShell script that does exactly what I did with Postman, but what it does is converts that JSON response to a CSV file, and I'm going to load that CSV file into Power BI so I can kind of visualize what's going on in my B2C tenant. I can run that, but I can just in the interest of time, I'll show you the results. I'm not making this up, it does work. So this is a Power BI desktop. I've imported the CSV file that's been extracted from the reporting API. And so, for example, I can see on Saturday the 4th of February, obviously it was a slow day at home, so I signed into my B2C tenant 13 times. Okay. Similarly, you can break it down by different policies that were run, sign in, sign up, or unified with a password. You can see different counts down here. That's just an activity timeline, but I can also report errors, maybe where policies failed to execute or users failed to sign themselves in or up, whatever else it may be. Anyway, just a few hints about how you can extract information from your or events from your B2C tenant and report on those using reporting tools. Any questions about any of that? No? Cool. So let's move on to the migration scenarios, Simon.
So as I said, there's guidance for using the Graph API to read, insert, update users inside your Azure AD or B2C identity store. But there's not a lot of guidance for how we would actually do this realistically. So what would we want the user experience to be for our users? So let's talk first about the steps we have to do. So we'll have to register an application using the portal. We've seen how to do that, or Chris has shown how to do that in that session yesterday. We need to go and replace our authentication library with an OpenID Connect library. So we need to use the Graph API to go and insert the users into our Azure AD, and then we want to think about how we handle the passwords. Now, we want to ask the question: currently, if the story is we're moving from a database that contains all those users in our current application, and we're now moving to Azure AD, how are those passwords stored within the database? Now, you'd think hopefully they're not stored in clear text, but let's say hypothetically they were. We would think none of us would do that. But if they were stored in clear text, it's a pretty straight migration. We can go and read those out and use the Graph API to insert the users directly into Azure AD. If, however, they are hashed, which would be more likely, we can't really unhash them. So we've got to come up with a strategy for how to deal with that. So we've got a couple of options. We can straight away go and create the users in the Graph API. So we can go and use that Graph API to create those users and to give them an initial password. So we'll go and generate them a temporary password, and then basically we can either send those out to the users to use those passwords directly. But if we don't want to send out passwords over email, probably the best option is to go over time sync those passwords over from your old application. So we'd go to our old application and say, well, when the person logs in, we have at that time have the password, and we'd go and push it over via the Graph API to the new system. So we'd be collecting those passwords over a period of 2 weeks. It would be this migration period, and then at the end of that, we'd switch over to the new system. So that's if you've got the ability to go and change your old system, you may not. If you don't have the ability to change your old system, you don't want to go and do that over time, then basically the option is to use the password reset. Now there is the ability to set, if we saw in the JSON web, or sorry, in the JSON's payload that we're sending into the Graph API, there is the ability to say that they have to change the password at first logon. Now, the only problem is that there's a current limitation where that will only work with the sign-in flow. And Chris is alluding to, or giving guidance that we probably prefer to use the sign-in and sign-up flow because it allows us the full customization. So if you were to just go with the plain sign-in flow with a limited amount of customization, you could, that experience would work. You could, they'd go to log in and they'd have to change it the first time. Yeah, but if you're using the one that you can fully customize, the sign up or sign in, we want to. What's going to happen at the moment with that current limitation is, as soon as they come and log in, it'll say invalid password, and the only option they have is to use the reset password button to allow them to go and send them an email verification to them as a second factor, and then they can click on a link there and change the password. So I guess the takeaway here, our guidance is that we would suggest that you use the reset password flow for whether or not you're going to use sign up or sign in. It's much clearer if you just say, well, to your users that we've set your password, but on your first login you're going to have to go and reset your password, which will send you an email to change it. So let's go have a look. Wow.
While someone's unlocking that, I think that best option to provide the best experience to those customers of yours that are active in your product or your site or your service over that 2-week period or whatever that migration period might be, if they're active in your site and they're signing themselves successfully into your old system, at which time you can sync their plain text password into your B2C directory, that just means that when you swap your application from old to new, they can continue to use the same password and not have to change anything. So for those users that haven't been back at your site during that migration period for those 2 or 4 weeks, they will have to be forced through a reset password flow. And they're active in their site, maybe that's the inconvenience that they have to deal with. Yeah.
Cool. All right, so looking at those two options. So the first option being we've got a this is representing our database. So we've got some user details. There's three different users, and we're including our extra parameters for our custom claims that have been registered against Wingtip Toys, and that's being the gamer tag and the gamer zone. So we can inject that at the same time. So basically, the passwords have been stored in clear text. Here they are, and we're going to insert them straight into the Graph API. And you'll be immediately able to authenticate against those. So let's go and have a look at the kind of PowerShell we need to do this. So I've gone and grabbed off the Azure AD Quick Start. There's the B2C Graph. I think it's B2C Graph Test or Graph Client. And it's basically a demo application that wraps all of the REST calls for you. So it's just basically an abstraction layer. So I've gone and grabbed that, and it's actually a console app. So I've changed it to a class library, removed the program.cs, and now just loading it straight into PowerShell. So the details that are required, and because I've created that video, I've been able to take those details beforehand. So we just need the client ID and the client secret. And then we're going to go and create an instance of that Graph client, roll through the users.csv, and create this payload. Let me just drag that down. So the creation type has to be local account. We're just defining the display name, the password we're just hard setting, and we're saying do not force the password to be changed on the first login. We're also setting these custom extension elements that we so if any further authentications will contain those within the JWT as custom claims. And then we just call that. So if we go into our users, we'll now have there's our three users, and we can go and show signing into that tenant. Let me go incognito window. Just so I don't get any tokens hanging over. And we want to choose the unified flow. And if we just go back to that users, we can just choose one of these guys. And the password's credential one, so. Okay, so we've logged in. So we've logged in as Slam. We can see the gamer tag. So because we've injected Slammer as the gamer tag, and we can see the gamer zone being underground. So that information, it's in the token, and it's available to be used within the application. So let's look at our other more realistic scenario. So we've got a whole lot of users now. Pretty hollow users with encrypted or hashed passwords. We can't go and inject those in, so we're going to go and specify a bit of a different experience. So we have a look in this PowerShell, and we're saying, well, it's exactly the same except for down here in the payload, where we're first generating a password randomly. So I'm just, in order to be within the boundaries of the password policy that's assigned to this tenant, I've just put password with a capital P and lowercase. So then the other characters will ensure that I stay within the boundaries of that password policy, which is customizable, that policy? No. And then I'm just setting that password, that random password, and setting this flag here, force change password next login to true. So that's going to make sure that when they next log in, they have to change the password. Now, once again, as we said, and actually I'll just show that, it'll be a lot easier. So if I go and run this, we'll now have another user. Yeah. So wish there's a refresh button on that one. You can actually just click off to use groups and click back on. But this is the slow way. Anyway, while that's refreshing, we'll just actually go and let's open up another incognito window and actually log in and show that experience that I'm talking about. So we're going to go and log in as ruby.lam, but we're going to need We're going to need Ruby on Lam's password, so. So logging in, choose the unified. Now what's going to happen if I choose the unified sign-in flow? It's going to give me a spurious error saying, I think, invalid password. Now that's because that change on password is not supported within that flow. And I think I can probably show where if I go and use the sign-in. So yeah, as our guidance is to use the sign up and sign in, because of our ability to customize it, the only option is to go and use the reset password from that other flow.
Yep. Does that make sense to people? So there's probably a couple of considerations there. Obviously, whether you have access to the current password or not, either because you've stored it encrypted or as plain text, which we hope not. Or you have access to it while users are signing into your existing app, okay, at which point you can sync it into the B2C directory. Okay. Now, if you were to randomise a password for ruby.lam@gmail.com, you may choose to send it via email. Hope you don't. But if the worst case is she'll have to forget, you'll have to notify that she has to forget her password the next time or the first time she signs into your B2C tenant. Yeah. Cool. So just to wrap things up.
Yeah. So I guess as I kind of presented at the start, there's mainly six main questions that I've asked and I guess you will ask when you start to work with a B2C application. And that was one, how does the application model work? And both Chris showed yesterday how to do that for a B2C application, and what I've showed today how to do that for an Azure AD application. Developer libraries, we've given some guidance on which developer libraries to use for which application type. So there's a number of options, but the best guidance is OpenID Connect for web apps and iOS and Android, and mCell for your native application. What are our abilities to customize the flow? What's our extensibility options? And we've seen that we can extend the look and feel. We can extend the tokens and put extra claims in, and we can totally change and choose which flow we want to use. We've seen some of the limitations sprinkled throughout, and those limitations are all clearly documented up on the B2C website. You can go up there and see the entire list if you want to see what applies to you. The actual blog is quite active, and they, as Chris was saying, they respond quite regularly to user voice requests. So if there's something that you want, go and look in user voice and upvote it, and the engineering team will be sure to have a look at that. Now, and finally, we've looked at some tips and tricks along the way, and looked at a migration story. So, hopefully, that kind of guidance or insight we gave you will show you that there's some potential strategies that you can use that might make the actual onboarding experience to a new system for your users a hell of a lot smoother.
Just as one last tip, because this is the one, if you don't remember anything else, remember this one. When you create a B2C tenant, right? If you attended yesterday's session, you might remember I had a diagram that kind of had applications interacting with the B2C engine, which interacts with all these triangles and squares that represent local accounts, sign-in providers and external ones, and an Azure AD directory in which all your accounts are managed, right? So app, B2C engine, Azure AD directory, right? So there's a separation of the B2C engine from the Azure AD directory that manages accounts for you. When you create your B2C tenant, in that Azure AD directory, this application will be registered. This represents the B2C engine that allows it to interact with the directory to authenticate users, create them, update them, so on and so forth. See that name there? Do not modify, used by B2C. Follow that advice. If you modify this, like add a new key and remove the existing one or whatever, or change the permissions, your B2C tenant will break and you won't be able to recover it. So if nothing else, don't forget that. With that, thank you for listening. Thank you for coming along at such an early hour on Friday. Of course, you continue the rest of your learning path for the rest of today. We value your feedback, of course. It's too late to fly a drone anymore, but please submit your evaluations and we take that feedback, take your best feedback. So thank you for your time today. We've got a couple of minutes for questions if you want to raise those now. Yes. No. Oh, sorry. The answer to that is probably no, you can't migrate it. Yeah. I was thinking about this last night because I knew someone's going to raise this question. Perhaps the best advice we can provide you now is to choose that less than ideal option of migrating users via the Graph API from your US tenant to your Australia tenant and force users through a password reset. Okay, because you won't have access to their password, their plain text password in the US tenant, and you can't collect it when they sign in the next time because B2C is managing that login flow, not your application. Yep. That's the best advice I can give you today.
You'd hope by that time maybe that change password flow is a little bit smoother on the sign up and sign in, and you wouldn't have to actually use the reset password.
Mm. So, yeah, not the best advice, but perhaps the only advice we can provide you today. It's the same if you want to move from a preview tenant to a GA tenant today. It's the same problem that you'll face. Yes?
Can you federate?
So the question was, can you federate a B2C instance with a different Azure AD directory? Today, no, you can't. It's integrated with the directory that it creates when you instance up the B2C service. Yes.
Can I still use roles and groups like I do with
the question was, can you use roles and groups? You can use groups. So, for example, yesterday I showed as a result of a sign-up flow or a user signing themselves up, the identity token that's issued to your application contains a claim called is new user set to true. So as a result of that, your web application can handle that by maybe adding that new user to the underground group because that was the gamer zone that was specified the user when they signed up. So you can create groups, you can manage memberships of groups, both adding and removing users. You can't nest those groups like you can with an enterprise directory, but there is some basic group management that you can do to maybe control the experience in your application as a result. No roles, no. So in the Azure AD directory, you can create Azure AD users that are not your consumer users. You can't, I don't believe you can sign in as them. I might demo that, test that in a moment. But for example, in the B2C directory that I created yesterday, I not only signed up consumer users, but also created a global administrator. Okay, which was administrator at tenant name, right? So I can sign into the portal using that user and assign, you know, add other users and sign into roles to manage the directory. Yep. But they don't represent my consumer users and you can't assign roles to them. Well, it doesn't make sense to assign roles to them, rather. Any further questions? I think we're a couple of minutes over, so thank you for hanging around. Have a good rest of the day.